This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you are listening to Ecotopia, a weekly program exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. I'm Stephen Chudy.
And I'm Susan Chudy. In the first part of the program tonight, we'll be armchair travelers. We'll be playing a pre-recorded interview with Adrian Scott, who's the curator of UC Chico's Anthropology Museum, where we tour a new exhibit exploring the ecosystems of tourism.
Then in the second half, we'll focus on several programs and projects coming up for young people in the North State, projects that help kids become engaged in ecotopian thinking. We'll talk first with Diane Suzuki about Pathway to Peace, and then Lisa Sun about California Dreams. And then we'll also tell you a little bit about a procession of the species that we are developing for the Endangered Species Fair of the Butte Environmental Council.
Ecotopia is made possible in part by member contributions and by American Qi Center for Health, offering acupuncture and Chinese herbs to treat chronic and acute conditions such as headaches, allergies, asthma, and more. Acupuncturist Bill Nickel offers clinics and consultations by calling 342-2895. And we're also brought to you by Alternative Energy Systems, a locally owned and operated partnership providing energy for life with sustainable energy available on the web at www.solarenergyforlife.com. Alternative Energy Systems offers energy solutions for residential, commercial, and agricultural needs. They can be reached by calling 345-6980.
We want to remind you that the opinions expressed on Ecotopia do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Last week, we traveled over to the Chico State University Anthropology Museum in the Merriam Library to talk with curator Adrian Scott about a new exhibit called The Anthropology of Tourism. She walked us about the exhibit and explained how an anthropologist looked at the artifacts, the culture of tourism. We'll now play the segments of that interview, interspersed with brief musical interludes in the manner of pictures at an exhibition. We're here in the Valaine Smith Museum at Chico State University. We're talking with Adrian Scott. She's the curator of the museum and well known to listeners of KZFR as The Storyteller, the show that comes on immediately after Ecotopia each night. Thanks for seeing us today in the museum.
Yeah, well, so glad to have you here as visitors and, curiosity bringing the world to the rest of Chico.
Great. Could you tell us a little bit about the Valaine Smith, both the museum, her history, and this current exhibit, Sacred Places, Dreams of Leisure, The Anthropology of Tourism?
Yeah, I would love to. The museum itself has been on campus, part of the anthropology department for the last 40 years, and was founded by Keith Johnson, who is a professor in anthropology, to be a hands-on location to learn about museology, museum studies with students in the department. And it is really unique in the nation because even when I was learning curatorial practices and museum studies, no one let you touch the objects. Everyone had you watch the directors and curators involved. And so this is a unique place where they learn all manners of installation, research, design, all the techniques that then make them competitive in the marketplace. So it's exciting to have been a part of a place where I would have liked to have gone to school. And then this exhibition, we change the exhibit twice a year, and this exhibit is focusing on one of Valaine's contributions to the whole field of anthropology. Back in the early 60s, she proposed a dissertation topic on tourism, and they said there was no body of work, you have to do something else. So she actually did something else and became a PhD in anthropology, and then she proceeded to amass this body of work with other founders in the field. And it really ties in with anthropology because anthropology is about looking at ourselves to understand others. And tourism is an interesting piece because while we are, traditionally anthropology looks at other cultures, tourism is kind of being more self-reflective about our traveling. And I think originally anthropologists were worried that they might be equated with the tourist, and they wanted to separate themselves from the tourist. Yeah. And now, you know, getting more into the actual field of it, realizing that there's really a lot of ways to look at travel and the impacts travel has. And so that is what I really think ties in with your show in Vicotopia, is, you know, what impact does travel have on ourselves when we travel, and what impact does it have on the others that we encounter?
So, excellent. Yeah. Let's stroll the museum a little bit, and we'll look at some of these exhibits.
One of the first displays you have here in the exhibit is Selling the Dream, Media and Tourism. And so tourism is not necessarily something that just came to us naturally. I guess that's what this...
Yeah. Well, in a way, yeah. I mean, in some ways, travel is as old as walking out of Africa. But in other ways, now we are... the media helps sell ideas to people to get a wave of momentum, and, you know, media coverage seems to really sell the dream. And so this display panel here, one of our students created, was called Selling the Dream. And front and center, we have Julia Roberts' movie, Eat, Pray, Love, and, of course, the book, too.
I wanted to go to all of those places when I saw the movie. Yeah, it sold the dream to me.
It does. It really does. And so there's something, you know, really powerful and also very productive. I mean, one of the consequences of the movie and the book, this is an interesting side note, is that in one of the places, I think actually it's more in the book, where she's in Indonesia, and there's a man who is selling scarves, and she says, "What can I do for you? You've really helped me out." And he says, "Tell your friends to come." Well, now he has so many of her friends, and, you know, all of us who've come, that he actually has extended family now who's working for him. So it was kind of a boon for some people. And so the media can be a positive influence in some ways for people in third world nations who need tourism for their livelihood. But then also we have a feature. New Zealand has a spike in travel since the movie Babe and Lord of the Rings.
Okay, right.
So some of that. But then also, you know, going back to the Grand Tour of Europe was a very important thing to do for wealthy aristocrats in the 1600s. Right. You know, you weren't really a person of note if you hadn't gone on your grand tour with your uncle and your grandfather, you know, for 3 years off to, you know, the continent.
Right, right. And some of the images that you have running here also show how tourism gets sold. I mean,
yes.
Again, I look at the images and I go, oh, can we go there?
I know, yes. So it's a really, the impact of visual media, you know, here we are on the radio, but we all can kind of close our eyes and imagine just these, we have our own fantasies, really, of where we want to go. And so we think about that, and then the media really picks up on that.
There are also places that have been constructed. I'm thinking late 19th century railroads built amusement parks at the far edge of town, at the ends of trolley lines, to promote travel, to get use of their services. And then there's Disneyland that becomes its own destination.
Yeah, that's right. That's really true. It is interesting how our cities and where things are located have impacted what gets built where, you know. And, you know, we do have another exhibit on Las Vegas that is all about, you know, building something that was where nothing was.
Right, right. and it's a destination just to do those things that they have set up to bring people there to do.
Adult Disneyland.
And I really like this map. This is a map of California with bicycle trails in California.
And
it has advertisers. We're accustomed to seeing this with advertisers around the edge of a map. When we go someplace, we get a free map with the advertisers. But this is the 1890s.
Right. And so, this map, it really shows that, we've been selling the dream for a long time. And it is. It's quaint to us. And you know, if you can imagine, you know, closing your eyes and seeing the wallpaper of some old style Victorian guest house. This is kind of the style of this map in a way, and it has these little advertising of all, like, take a bike ride, you know, and it's very quaint. And sometimes now, we're wanting to go back to those glory
those
days.
Old times. Mm-hmm. Right. Interesting.
It's true.
This panel is called Caribbean Dreams and traces a little bit how tourism has affected the Caribbean. What's going on here?
Well, yeah, so this. So first I want to kind of remind our audience that the Caribbean includes Jamaica, Puerto Rico, the Eastern Caribbean Islands, and there's lots of, you know, little island chains that go all the way from Florida to Venezuela that's considered part of the Caribbean. So it's a big area. And it has a kind of a long history that has seen positive days and negative days, and it, you know, began in the slave trade and plantations and sugar crops and was a booming industry for the French and the British.
So it was colonized early on.
Yes, colonized early on, and
in Columbus days, I guess.
Yeah, starting, you know, 1590s all the way through the 1800s. And in some ways, the colonial influence is completely still there, especially when, you know, when one thinks about, like, you know, a Caribbean vacation sounds, you know, I mean, we even have those, it just pops in my head right now, that Kermit the Frog song, the Caribbean amphibian.
Yeah.
Being the kids programmer that I think of these things. But anyway.
And you were talking about fantasies,
yeah.
That we have fantasies in our heads. I think a lot of times when people think of a getaway,
yes.
A completely relaxing getaway, their images are often the Caribbean.
Yes, this whole fantasy with that the island life is serene and without troubles, no weather, everything perfect, you know, and must have a pristine beach,
right.
Must have clear blue water, must
right.
have an umbrella, must have a Mai Tai, you know,
that's
kind of like what people think. And yet, you know, that's kind of our superimposition onto what really might be the case culturally. I mean, that's our fantasy of it. And then, you know, we found in our research, the students who were doing the research on this, that the Caribbean loses 70-90% of the money earned from tourism, and that the elites of the cultural actually are the ones that retain the benefits more so. And tourism can be blamed for other social changes as well, prostitution, drug trafficking, violence, you know, all that.
Right. So one of the things we often say to ourselves to justify our traveling to different places is that we're helping the local economy. We're
right.
really
The exhibit is called Road Trip America, illustrated with photographs of cars beginning the 1800s, wonderful cars like the 1957 Chevrolet Bel Air with its two-tone paint job, the minibus, the VW microbus, and other cars on up to the current minivans and the SUVs. Adrian Scott, please tell us a little bit about this exhibit and what it illustrates.
Yeah, well, I think while this one doesn't necessarily tackle the green aspects of America, in fact, it sort of is eulogizing, maybe not quite, but celebrating and remembering fondly the big open road and, you know, Howard Johnson's and, Paul Bunyan and the Blue Ox and the crazy things you can see on the way, as well as the beautiful, you know, canyons and wonderful places that are accessible on highways and byways in America, and that kind of, American dream, if you will, of, you know, getting out there and seeing America. And we have so many songs in our folk music history that, you know, kind of celebrates the car. And so this is kind of an homage to the car, alas.
Mm-hmm. And there are, again, some created exhibits. You've got the world's largest ball of twine. I've actually seen that on a bicycle trip. It was the only thing keeping a small town alive was people stopping to photograph the ball of twine.
It's so funny.
One of the contradictions and conundrums, I think, now is that one of the things that you can really see well with road travel is national parks and national forests. And so here we are driving our, you know, gas-guzzling cars to go look at these pristine places that are being threatened because we're driving gas-guzzling cars.
I know, yeah. It is... It is a conundrum, precisely. I love a drive through Yosemite myself,
right.
But these things are, while they have become accessible, and what's also, you know, wonderful about that is that seniors and people with disabilities, you know, there's access more, but we have to kind of begin to temper that with, you know, what is good for the environment.
Here we are at an exhibit called The Art of Travel, and before us is a penguin, comes from the Southwest, decorated with Southwest Puebloan designs. Please tell us about this artifact, this creation.
Yeah, so we wanted to kind of point out that sometimes the artifacts that people gather on their trips are obviously, this one really, you know, kind of really points out so obviously that this obviously could not be an authentic artifact from the original peoples. As everyone knows, a penguin doesn't live in the Southwest. But apparently when this was made in the 1970s, penguins were all the craze. Like the pet rock, penguins were like really big. And so what the locals knew is that tourists would buy a penguin with Hopi designs on it, or any other Puebloan people. And so this is just a classic example of how the tourist drive, you know, pushes the culture to do something different.
And here's a Kachina doll made out of tin cans. It's a really neat piece of art, but obviously not the original.
Right. And so, so this is, you know, I mean, there's all these different levels of, you know, wanting to know what is, quote, authentic and what, you know, but, and with all of these works of art, the original people, the people who were selling it were Native people who were benefiting from this, and yet one can see how our modern culture has influenced a drive to create other things. And with a Kachina doll, too, while this one that you're seeing is made out of a tin can, it's kind of... definitely a recycling thing, and very beautiful folk art. On the other hand, the Kachina was a sacred relic in the original use of the Kachina, you know, much like any other sacred relic we might have in our own worship practices. So one could hardly really imagine selling, you know, a crucifix in this way, or, you know, I mean, maybe so, maybe they do actually, but there's just sort of, you know, this commodification of culture and making things that may not represent the original. And so kind of striking a balance, and, you know, maybe the penguin goes too far, or maybe the tin can Kachina is okay, you know, who knows how to evaluate.
But the originals are still available in many locations, and so you can still get authentic.
Yes.
You probably pay a good deal more for
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes. And then anthropologists too take it to another level of splitting hairs about authentic, you know, is authentic really before contact,
mm-hmm.
and then is it also the ones that haven't been altered to be allowed to be seen because they are so sacred that they really aren't supposed to be seen, and
right.
like
mm-hmm.
what, and this is kind of a tangent, we don't have one of these because the Iroquois false face design is so sacred that it they've asked for all of them to be repatriated, and most museums, including the Smithsonian, have complied, and now they are just completely unseen. And that, I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Here's an exhibit called Surviving Tourism, and we have personal connections with both of the elements of the display here, the Maasai people of Africa and Hawaiian culture. Could you tell us, please, a little bit about both of these?
Yeah, and so so the surviving tourism is, in a way, not so much about us when we travel surviving the trip, but more how are these cultures doing as they survive our visits, and in fact, our visiting is helping them preserve their mm-hmm. culture. It's kind of a double-edged sword. With the Maasai, I've never been to see, but I know that. But they're trying to kind of preserve their culture, and then people who visit realize that in some ways there's maybe kind of a show. And so that was sort of your experience.
We were traveling pretty light. We were camping. It was billed as an eco tour. Went to a Maasai village, and yes, I was invited up to dance with the Maasai warriors, all of whom were much taller than me and much more nimble.
Yes.
But we bounced up and down, and I felt generally silly about the whole thing. But as you say, you don't quite know how to interpret what they are doing.
Right, because again, it's kind of back to, like with the Tillicum Village we talked about, this is a way of preserving their livelihood and their culture, and yet we conscious travelers do feel the demeaning aspect of it potentially that, mm-hmm. that feels uncomfortable. And then Hawaii, you know, we're all familiar with the luau. I mean, you know, kids' birthday parties. I mean, we've really commodified that so much. And so in this exhibition, we're showing some of the return to original practices. And yet we also know that even being clothed is, you know, an imposition that the missionaries brought at one time, and women were not traditionally a part of the hula, and yet now we really think of the women as part that the only part of the hula, and we're surprised when we see men. But men are more and more reclaiming this heritage of theirs, and I think it's really positive for their cultural enrichment, self-growth, and it still is, you know, a wonderful blessing dance to watch.
We also see here postcards with women who don't look much like Native Hawaiian women. They look more like Dorothy Lamour
yes.
Than the people who live there. So, a kind of appropriation of culture.
Yes, very much so.
This is an interesting display called Controversial Destinations. What makes destinations controversial?
Well, I think that any place where a tragedy happened and the horror of it is compelling for people. We want to, perhaps we want to show remorse or empathy with the people who have died here, and so it's almost like a pilgrimage. Sometimes some sites, some people have said that some visiting such sites can also be a form of trying to express repressed emotions that our culture has not experienced. So there's kind of like, there really are people and sites, websites that really hone in on these kinds of things exclusively. So it's not just you are drawn to one particular one and you make that a pilgrimage of your life, but that you're really wanting just all these kind of horrific experiences. So it is controversial in that sense. And like some of the ones that we have up here on display is the cemetery at Little Bighorn. And that is controversial because, do you visit the Custer Battlefield National Monument? Do you visit the Native American people who died? And, you know, what really is our message here? So that one is controversial. And then, of course, a very, very tragic and classic controversial site is Auschwitz, where horrific practices to Jews, gays, and lesbians, and, terrible atrocities happen there. And so visiting there can be, Elie Wiesel says, never forget. It's important to have a memory of this so that we can learn from our past. And then finally we have the memorial at Ground Zero, which is, still being discussed today. It's very current because, we're wondering, should a mosque be erected nearby? What is the point of this place, and who's being memorialized, and how should we remember it? And so our country right now is discussing this in some way. And so, but then as you can also see, this exhibit also points out some of the kind of things that are strange, the disaster-themed souvenirs of, we've got water bottles with the NYPD stickers on it, and sort of a little bit, you know, hard-to-swallow gifts.
Right. It seems to remember is important, but to commercialize it seems a travesty.
Yes.
Our final stop on this tour of the Verlaine Smith Museum at Chico State with our tour guide, Adrian Scott, is a slightly self-referential exhibit. It's called Culture Palaces, Museums and Tourism. Please tell us about this one.
Yeah, so, yeah, like you said, you know, this is us kind of reflecting on ourselves as a museum as well, and not really trying to put ourselves in these big culture palaces, but we did kind of laugh at the irony of, you know, being exhibiting the Louvre. We even have the Mona Lisa on display, as well as a small picture of David. But the point is that museums have always been destinations, and whenever people are planning, you know, even just a small family, even weekend outing to San Francisco, it usually includes, you know, some destination of a museum, exploratorium, or the MoMA, or De Young, and those type of things. So we're all, you know, geared in that direction, and so this is just paying homage to that heritage.
And this is a wonderful destination in itself, the Verlaine Smith Museum. Please tell us a little more. The exhibit runs through July.
Yes. Yeah, so this exhibit, the hours of the museum are Tuesday through Saturday, 11 to 3 through May, and then in the summer we have summer hours, which are Monday through Thursday, 10 to 3, I think. yes, 10 to 3. And the yeah, and so this exhibit is up all the way through July, and we would love to have you come. It's free admission, and it's really great work that the students have done here, so we'd love to see you.
And in great touristy fashion, while we were here, some new tote bags arrived, and you can acquire these if you need a souvenir of your visit.
Yes, yes, we have a small gift shop, and try to offer many fair trade items. And we will also be having a Bali jewelry art fundraiser / sale on Valentine's Day. So,
oh, great.
Okay.
Yeah, so
good.
Come and see us.
Thanks very much, Adrian Scott.
Thanks, Adrian.
Thank you.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and in this segment, we are discussing some projects that will help engage the next generation of ecotopians, kids who can think about social, environmental, and technological issues. With us in the studio is Diana Suzuki. She's well known to our listeners as host of One World Radio on KZFR on Wednesdays. She is also the coordinator of the Beyond Violence Alliance, and she's heading up a project called Pathway to Peace for the Chico Peace and Justice Center. Welcome, Diana.
Hi.
Please tell us about Pathway to Peace. This is your second Pathway to Peace.
Uh-huh.
What's it all about, please?
Well, last year, it was the first year, and what happens is we're inviting kids and families to join us in a walk through town. And it starts out at Children's Playground and weaves around through town, stopping at what we call peace checkpoints. And, beforehand, the the kids, the participants, have pouches or bags that are pre-made, or they can make them themselves. And at each peace checkpoint, they'll receive a token of peace, maybe a snack. And then just weaving through town and ending up at Martin Luther King Park.
And you have a rally or some presentations at MLK Park at the mm-hmm. at the end of the walk.
That's what we did last year.
Yes.
We hope to do the same thing. And we hope the weather is going to be just as nice as last year.
It was very nice. Ecotopia did participate last year. We gave away refrigerator magnets, how you can save the world. So that's kind of typical of what the kids get. How do kids and families get involved in this project?
We do have donation sheets, sign-up sheets for the kids to collect donations that are going to go to the Peace and Justice Center. They are at the Peace Center on Broadway and 5th, 4th?
Between 5th and 6th.
5th and 6th. And if you'd like, you can contact me and we can get you some too.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think at the top of this we said what the date is for this.
No, when we haven't.
let's talk about when it's going to be. And
it's going to be in a month, just about a month from now, Saturday, March 19th, and we begin the walk at 9 a.m. And
okay.
Seems a little early, but we had a good group last year, and the samba drummers were with us, and we just danced. Really, we just danced through town. It was very fun.
Right. And are there people so far who are signed up to be peace points at along the way? Or
Peace checkpoints are sponsored by organizations that are affiliated with peace and social justice, such as Ecotopia. It starts with, last year we had the Chico Labyrinth, and I'm not sure if they're going to be part of it this time.
Right.
Chico Labyrinth Project. They are attempting to build a labyrinth in children's playground, so it's a good place to start there. We went by the vigil.
Okay,
Let's see. Camp Casey also was at the children's playground. Go by the vigil, then we end up, I guess, all the way to the downtown plaza, and around the fountain there'll be different organizations. KZFR had a table.
I think the Butte Free School was there last year. I don't know if they'll be there this year, but and several others.
Right. The Chico Natural Foods had a checkpoint there. So can people contact you if they're interested in being a peace checkpoint? Or do you have that already all set?
Sure, we could add a few. We do have the ones that we had from last year.
Uh-huh.
And then you go by the Chico Peace and Justice Center, then Lion Books, Trinity United Methodist.
Right.
The synagogue, Congregation Beth Israel, the Chico Friends Meeting House, the Quakers, mm-hmm. and we scooped by Dorothy Johnson Center, Chapmantown, mm-hmm. and then we end up at the destination.
So how long is that walk?
It's
about, little kids did it. I saw little kids
I can't quite remember, a couple miles,
uh-huh.
but it sounds far, but it went pretty fast, and little kids made it the whole way.
Right, and some kids in strollers, and it was really sweet because mm-hmm. All these little kids were, you know, participating however their little legs or wheels could allow them
and
to
I
do it.
And I didn't hear any kids whining.
I didn't either.
Nice, great. What would you like to see kids learn from this experience? They're young, getting started.
Right. Well, one of the things that was inspired me was thinking about the Peace Pilgrim, Mildred Lissette. God, I've forgotten her last name now. And she's a woman that walked across the United States a couple times, I believe,
with
a sign that just said peace on it. And she just walked with, I think, a cone, a toothbrush, and just counted on people feeding her and housing her sometimes. And she said she would just keep walking until there was peace in the world.
Wow.
That obviously did.
Yeah, it's not too, as we're saying too, in terms of thinking about Ecotopia, we like to think that the program that it includes social justice.
Mm-hmm.
We're primarily an environmental show,
mm-hmm.
but all these are so deeply intertwined that to help kids think in positive ways mm-hmm. at a young age is a great contribution, I think.
There's another man that inspires me. He's John Francis, and He was at the Bioneers this year, I heard. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear him yet, but he has a book that's called Planet Walker. And when there was an oil spill on the coast, Northern California coast, he decided to just start walking because he didn't want to be a part of the oil industry.
Right.
And he also just walked across town, across the country for 17 years. And then at some point he decided to stop talking as well.
Mm. Oh, my gosh.
And so he didn't talk or ride in vehicles.
So we don't expect the little kids to give
no.
up.
But this is some inspiration. We have some role models. Right. It's nice to know.
Let's repeat the basic information. It's called Pathway to Peace. It takes place Saturday, March 19, from 9 a.m. to noon, starting off at Children's Park. Kids are encouraged to collect some funds in advance. Do you have goals for how much kids would bring in?
Well, we've asked kids to ask their sponsors to donate $10 to them mm-hmm. per walk, and we're hoping that each kid could raise $50. Mm.
And 10% of this goes to Pennies for Peace.
That's
as
right.
Well as
Greg Mortensen's organization.
Great. Uh-huh. Okay. And you can get more information. Stop by the Chico Peace and Justice Center, 526 Broadway, or go to www.chico-peace.org. We want to thank you, Diana, for being with us tonight and for doing this wonderful project for us.
It's really great. I think there was just a really great feeling last year, and I hope we have a little event at the end maybe, because I think there was a lot of good spirit there. And so I'm really looking forward to doing it again this year.
Me too. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us.
See you there.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. This country, come take me home again. Now I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train.
Good friends too, 'cause it's getting nearer. It soon will be with you. Come and join the living. It's not so far from you, and it's getting nearer. Soon it will all be true. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and tonight in the second half hour, we're talking about some projects coming up for young people in the North State that encourage what we like to think of as ecotopian thinking. In this case, it's a project that we're involved with. We've been invited once again to MC the Endangered Species Fair for the Butte Environmental Council, and this has given us an opportunity to introduce a project that we've been dreaming about and scheming about for a while. Susan, tell us about it, please.
So the Endangered Species Fair will be on May 7th. It's always the first weekend in May. And we have added a little feature to this. It's called the Procession of the Species. And the Procession of the Species, we would like everyone to participate. We would like businesses, nonprofits, families, friends, school organizations to create a puppet or a costume that represents your favorite creature. You could be water, you could be something in the water. The options are unlimited.
You can also, with your friends, create an enormous puppet or a hand puppet. And that could be your participation in the procession of the species. We will be having four workshops. Chita Chudi, who is a puppeteer, will be conducting the workshops to teach you how to build puppets. The puppet workshops will take place four Friday afternoons from 4:30 to 7:30, the end of March and the beginning of April. So the puppet workshops will be March 18th and March 25th, April 1st and April 8th on Friday afternoons. They'll be held out at the Grub House, which is on Dayton Road. We will come back to this topic again and again, and I think we'll start giving you some ideas about things that you can create. Chita Chudi, the puppeteer, created a red spider mite that he wore on his back when he participated in the procession of the species in Olympia, Washington. And this is where we got the inspiration. It's an enormous parade in Olympia.
We also want to mention that we're willing to ourselves go into schools to do workshops. We've had a couple nibbles about that already. If a teacher is interested, we'll come in. We'll bring piles of recycled material, styrofoam, cardboard, fabric remnants, and in relatively short order, an hour and a half, 2 hours or so, help your kids get at least started on their costume or puppet. Again, it's designed to not be terribly consumptive of your time. If you want to do one of the big elaborate puppets, that might take a little bit longer. But it's possible to prepare for this procession of the species in a shorter period of time, and we're happy to help out with that. So you could give us a call or contact us, ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com, if you're interested in getting involved in that way.
One of the things that we're wanting to do, we, as you can tell from the kinds of programs we bring to you on Ecotopia, we are concerned about the future of the planet. We are concerned about the future of creatures on the planet, of wildlife, of water life. But we also believe that there's a great deal to celebrate, beautiful things in our world that we should attend to and celebrate. So this is meant to be a happy occasion. We'd like artists involved. We'd like drummers, dancers, musicians of various sorts involved, and to celebrate the Earth.
Many of you already know the Endangered Species Fair. There will be all kinds of booths, schools, organizations, nature organizations, describing their projects. We envision that the procession will take place about midway through the Endangered Species Fair, and it will be a march. If you're familiar with Cedar Grove in Bidwell Park, kids, adults, all puppeteers, costumiers will march through. We, as MCs, will be doing some announcing from the stand about what specific critters are represented in the procession this year. So again, we hope you will join us. Email us if you're of interest in doing it. You can also go on the Beck website, becknet.org, to connect with the Endangered Species Fair website. So please do consider joining us.
There's no combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard. No song that I could sing, but I can try for your heart. And our dreams, and they are made out of real things, like a shoebox of photographs with sepia tone loving. Love is the answer, at least for most of the questions of my heart. Like, why are we here and where do we go? And knock on me so hard. It's not always easy, and sometimes life can be deceiving. I'll tell you one thing, it's always better when we're together. It's always better when we're together. Yeah, we'll look at them stars when we're together. Well, it's always better when we're together. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. Thank you. moments just might find their way into my dreams tonight. But I know that they'll be gone when the morning light sings or brings new things. For tomorrow night you see that they'll be gone.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR. Tonight, we're now going to talk with Lisa Sun about California Dream Work. It's an initiative organized by Soroptimus International of Chico. It's designed to benefit students in high schools in Northern California and provide them with the opportunity for green inspiration and international cultural awareness. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me, Steve. It's actually called California Dream Week. And just wanted to clarify that. And it is organized by Soroptimus International of Chico. And really, in a nutshell, it is an ideas contest. So what juniors and seniors in high school do throughout Northern California, from Monterey to the border, is they dream up an idea of what a sustainable future would look like. Mm-hmm. And there's three categories in which they will do that: in architecture and interior design, transportation, and product complements.
Could you describe a little bit? Product complements confused me slightly. How do those, what are they and how do they work?
Well, that's an excellent question. A product complement is a complement to a product that already exists. So for example, I'm sitting here and I have my clean canteen next to me. And the top part of the clean canteen is the lid, and it's got a little loop to put your finger, hand, maybe keychain or something. And so that's a complement to a product that already exists. So you might have an idea of like, wow, if they could only do this to this product, it would make it perfect.
Okay. I saw a photograph, too, of a glove mouse so that you don't get quite the carpal tunnel syndrome. Wear your mouse instead of having it on the desk.
There you go. Perfect example.
So how do kids do this? They don't have to create these products. It's an idea contest, not a product contest at this point.
Exactly. It's kind of like the science fair, except you don't have to create the model. You don't have to prove that it can happen. It really is a time, or it's an opportunity for juniors and seniors in high school to think outside of the box, to go, wow, I have this great idea about solar paneled, roofing material. Mm-hmm. Instead of adding solar panels, that it's part of the roofing material. So it's really an opportunity for them to think outside of the box and get their creative ideas going. They do, however, need to be able to draw or write a photograph of something that's similar to what their idea is, because then they will submit those ideas online, and they need to go to www.californiadreamweek.com, and they register online. They don't need to have a teacher or their school. There's a place where they're going to put the teacher's name in and the school that they attend, because we need to make sure it's in Northern California. But they're doing it on their own, and they register it online, and then they'll get a number, and then they'll enter that number in. Once they put all their information in, they'll get an email back with their entry number. They'll put their entry number in and then submit their idea. And then all of the ideas will be compiled. The last day to submit your entry is Friday, March 4th. So after that date, there will be a panel of experts in the areas of architecture, interior design, entrepreneurs, artists, engineers, and they will be the judges. And then once the winners have been announced, then they will contact the winners. There'll be the top three winners in each category, so a total of 9 winners that are juniors and seniors in high school. They can receive scholarships of up to $5,250, so, $5,000. And then they'll share their idea or their dream with that specialist in the field. And then it'll be up to that specialist in the field to design the idea so that we can see a working model of that. And then depending upon who the winner is and what that idea is, then the designer will go from there. It may be something that the student ends up, gaining rights to this incredible invention.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so the actual events will happen, the culminating event will happen on May 6th, 7th, and 8th, and we'll be displaying the winners and their projects in downtown Chico.
Okay, and we're going to ask, too, if we can get some of those kids to come on the show about that time. It would be fun to talk with them about their ideas as well.
Oh,
so we
that'd
hope
be
that's
great.
Possible.
Great. Excellent. We'd love to do that. And if they check out the website, www.californiadreamweek, there it's an extensive website, very easy to navigate through. And there are areas where they can look into the categories and get ideas of what have been done in
right.
the past.
That's what I was gonna ask.
Yeah, they're not going to like steal the ideas, but they can look at
no,
it.
They can see what kinds idea. Of things right. have been done and what the categories look like and
exactly.
actual practical stuff.
Exactly, and it's very user-friendly. There are some video clips on there, some interviews, some great ideas. And what I try to tell the students, because I'm visiting schools in Northern California right now, is to just get your ideas on there. Your teacher doesn't have to walk you through it. Your parent doesn't have to walk you through it. It's not something that's intensive where you're going to need to spend, you know, 50 or 60 hours. It may end up being 10 to 15 hours with your thought processes of what is this idea? What is my dream? And sharing it, definitely. But it is something to, these are our entrepreneurs and our engineers and our artists of the future.
Right, our ecotopians, in fact.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right. You know, these are our sustaining life force community.
So, It's an idea project. It's California Dream Week. The deadline is March 4th, and you can get lots of information, www.californiadreamweek.com. Thank you very much, Lisa Sun, for being with us tonight to talk about the project.
Thank you so much, Steve.
And that's it for Ecotopia for this evening. Ecotopia is made possible in part by member contributions and by American Qi Center for Health, offering acupuncture and Chinese herbs to treat chronic and acute conditions such as headaches, allergies, asthma, and more. Acupuncturist Bill Nickel offers clinics and consultations. Call him at 342-2895. And we are supported by Alternative Energy Systems, a locally owned and operated partnership providing energy for life with sustainable energy. Their information is available on the web at www.solarenergyforlife.com. Alternative Energy Systems offers energy solutions for residential, commercial, and agricultural needs. They could be reached by calling 345-6980.
And coming up at 7 this evening, you get to hear from Adrian Scott again. She's going to have some stories and songs for you. And so join Adrian for a trip around the world. We've already taken a trip around the world with her tonight, exploring the hopes, dreams, and fears that are universal to all people. At 7:30, All Mixed Up is on. 2.5 hours of rock and pop from the edges of mainstream and contemporary music. Stay tuned and listen to All Mixed Up at 7:30.
Thank you for listening to Ecotopia. I'm Stephen Chudy.
I'm Susan Chudy. Contact us at ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com or visit our website, ecotopiakzfr.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and usually receive advance notice of upcoming shows. Good night.